You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So right now, Ed said he got a good pastrami day. A good pastrami at a Famous Sam's. Which one did you go to, Ed?
Thornydale and River.
Thornydale and River. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's the one Bill Beard just said, Choya and River, that same one, okay. Is the one to go to. And then, of course, the Sausage Shop on Prince and Fairview is probably, if you got something else, give us a call. Now, I got to get to this before Phil Kirpin from American Commitment gets on the line. So I had three people from the press yesterday forward me this because they knew I'd be interested in it. And they love Pima County so much. So the Keno Southfields are ready to go. These are the extra so many fields and some pickleball courts that they are going to justify by saying they're going to get all these statewide national tournaments to come play soccer in Tucson. We'll talk about that another time because I got to get this out because this part is... So I went on... Caitlin Schmidt did a story about this last year on how much this is costing taxpayers. So... These fields south of I-10, and there was a plan, I thought Allie said, to punch a hole underneath the interstate, which will cost even more, is $26 million for these fields south of Keno. $26 million. We can't fix the road, but $26 million. Okay? So the press got out the don't miss, join us. To celebrate the latest addition to the Keno Sports Complex. The event will start with a ribbon cutting and feature several speakers, see below, and continue with an open house that includes a tour of the entire facility. Remember, keep this number in your head, kids. $26 million. It's going to happen tomorrow, 4 p.m. at the Keno South Complex. The entrance is located north of Benson Highway between Campbell and Irvington. The amazing speakers is, as we like to, someone referred to, I didn't realize this, Radar, you know, from...
from MASH.
Ramon Valadez. So Radar, Emperor Huckleberry, Brent Durad from Visit Tucson, and Don McGann of the builder, Don McGann and Associates. Okay? These are your fascinating speakers. Brent's the best one out of all those. It sure ain't the Emperor and Radar. So here's the best part. The event, it says in bold letters in a big line underneath it, this event is not open to the public.
They're just going to talk to themselves.
Right, so for your $26 million, it's your money.
Yes.
That they didn't put to roads, that they didn't put to cops, which they didn't put to make the other parks better.
No.
Okay, they didn't put it into Rito Park. They didn't put it into the soccer fields at Rito Park, let alone the horse part.
Right.
Okay, $26 million, and you are not allowed to go see it as part of this.
The suits are going to talk to the suits.
So they're going to have their tour and stuff for everyone, but the public can go to hell.
That sounds like Pima County.
Do you guys get it yet? Remember I keep telling you when the money goes from your checking account to Chuck's checking account, that it gets your taxpayer stink off of it and there's no responsibility to you? This is a perfect example. So, Pima County taxpayers, thank you for your $26 million. The, quote, so-called political and business leaders and some press people are allowed to go to this ribbon cutting. So, what I would love for some wakies to do is go.
Yeah.
And I want it filmed.
You're not allowed in here.
I want, please, seriously, I don't know if Chris King can mobilize a few people. He's always got the chutzpah, as we like to say, to do such things. I would like you guys to see if someone can go to this. And I want it on film, and I want to show the Pima County Sheriff's Department, if that's who they have working it, or the rent-a-cops throwing you out of the facility ribbon-cutting for your $26 million. All right, 7:17 in the morning. We got to go right to the phones. We got Phil Kirpin. He is the head man at American Commitment. Phil, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. So you were just telling me that there's this sham of an impeachment has a new little twist to it. So let's talk about how many days ago did Nancy and the crew, quote, impeach the president?
Well, you know, they voted to impeach the president 27 days ago. So it'll be 4 full weeks tomorrow. Whether they actually impeached him yet is sort of, it's like angels dancing on the head of a pin, because some of the, actually the top Democratic impeachment expert witness said he's not impeached yet. He's not impeached until they actually send articles of impeachment to the Senate. So I don't know if he's impeached, but they're stalling, or if he's not quite technically impeached yet, because, they could debate that all the time. The point is, it's completely absurd to say we have to do this slapdash sort of, half-witted impeachment. I tried to avoid a bad word for you there. Impeachment.
Thank you.
As urgently as possible, because of the urgent threat to national security, of the urgent, horrible threat the president poses. We have no time to afford any due process. And now after the vote, we're just going to sit for days and weeks and maybe over a month. And, it really, I think, exposes just how comically stupid the whole thing is. And this latest twist, the husband of Kellyanne Conway, George Conway, is now urging Nancy Pelosi, get this, he says she should send just the obstruction of Congress article to the Senate, but she should continue to hold the abuse of power article in her back pocket. So in other words, go to the Senate and have a trial just on this idea that going to the court and asking for a decision on whether executive privilege applies is a high crime and misdemeanor, but hold in your back pocket the idea of whether this Ukraine nonsense itself is impeachable hold that for a second trial, basically. This is the latest genius.
Is there someone in your car trunk trying to get out? I keep hearing this bump in the back.
That's the windshield wiper.
Oh,
okay. I will drive without the wiper for you, because it's light rain.
Well, no, I don't want you to kill yourself either, so put the wiper out. It sounded like you had someone in the trunk, and it just went boom, boom, boom.
No, it's all right.
So I like Kimberly Strassel from the Journal called it the rolling impeachment, right, of President Trump. So the idea is, what does I guess my thing is, so for the Democrats politically, right, what does this benefit? We know short term they'll do more fundraising in the echo chamber of the Democrat Party. But my take has been, if you really wanted to kill Trump and hurt him in an election, aren't they doing this too early?
Well, the very, very curious thing about the timing is that if, in fact, and supposedly Speaker Pelosi is presenting to the House Democrats today on her grand strategy, and then perhaps finally sending the impeachment to the Senate sometime this week, if that's true, if that's accurate and occurs, the timing will not in any way damage President Trump, but it will be very damaging to Bernie Sanders, who just took the lead over who's probably Pelosi's preferred candidate, Joe Biden. And, of course, a trial will pull Sanders back from Iowa and New Hampshire just in the crucial weeks ahead of the caucus and primary. And it's very curious, because there being no logical reason in terms of the logic of impeachment or of hurting the president for her to have delayed at least 4 weeks, the only political logic I see is that she's hoping to give Biden a boost by pulling his rivals off the campaign trail, making him sit in the Senate in a trial.
Does Mitch McConnell really need to wait for her for anything?
Well,
constitutionally?
It's a little ambiguous. I guess it depends on whether you think the president has been impeached or not. If the president has been impeached, the Senate under the Constitution has the sole power to try all impeachments. They need not wait for any message or any other niceties based on the rules of the House or the Senate. If the president's been impeached, the Senate could move to a trial anytime at its choosing with any rules of its choosing constitutionally. The tricky part, the ambiguous part is, has he been impeached?
Correct.
Of course, we know Nancy Pelosi herself says he has been. So for whatever that's worth, she says he's been impeached. So that would sort of lend support to the idea the Senate could take it up anytime, whether she likes it or not. On the other hand, the Democrats' top constitutional expert witness, Noah Feldman from Harvard Law, says he hasn't been impeached yet, and it's still up to the House to go through with the final ministerial act by which he will actually be impeached. And so the question of whether the Senate can act or not depends on whether you think the president's been impeached or not. If he has been impeached, they could start the trial whenever they wish. If the act of impeachment requires the sending of articles, then they can't constitutionally start a trial yet. But that would also mean the president hasn't been impeached yet. And so I don't know. It's a tricky question. Suffice it to say, it has never been hashed out prior to now, because there's never been an impeachment that was voted for but not effectuated. So we are in a unique and highly unusual circumstance constitutionally, and there are people who are of both beliefs. So I don't know, Chris. It's sort of like the Schrodinger's impeachment, if you
Thank
will.
You.
Yeah.
We're talking to Phil Kirpin from American Commitment. Check out AmericanCommitment.org. What should the how? If you were the Republicans, how do you execute the judo flip as you go through elections, just to shove this right back in the Democrats' face?
Well, I think the key point to make in the elections is that, you know, voting for a Democrat for Congress is a vote for four more years of impeachment. And you don't have to take our word for it. You look at the things the Democrats themselves have said. Karen Bass, Democrat from California, said that they will impeach Trump again in his second term. Al Green, the author of the first three impeachments that failed, and by the way, you know, they had three failed impeachments on the House floor for things like criticizing NFL players for the anthem protest and allegedly saying asshole countries and other extremely serious things like that. You know, they got 95 votes in last July to impeach President Trump for tweets insulting Ilhan Omar. So, I mean, the idea that a vote for a Democrat is a vote for anything but four more years of impeachment is ridiculous. And Al Green, sorry to complete my thought, Al Green said on C-SPAN, there is no limit to the number of times we can impeach this president. And so I really think the key for the congressional elections, considering there are so many members of Congress, Democrats, sitting in seats that President Trump won last time and probably will win again, the key for this election, I think, for the Republican House candidates is to say, look, You can't vote for a Democrat. Even if you like the guy more than you like me, nothing's going to happen for the next 4 years except impeachment after impeachment after impeachment. If you want to accomplish anything, you have to vote Republican. And I think that's going to be a pretty strong message in a lot of places in this country.
Do you think what's your confidence that the National Republican Party and all their candidates can sell the good news of what's going on economy-wise and how it's the Republicans that have brought this to you? For everyone, the working poor, it really has been the rising tide that raises all the boats.
Yeah, and wage growth has actually been by far the strongest at the low end. We've seen significant wage gains, and the Democrats want to say, oh, that's because a bunch of states raised the minimum wage. But we've seen wage gains on the low end of the scale everywhere in this country, including lots of places that didn't raise the minimum wage because the economy's been strong. There's been a lot of competition for entry-level and lower-skilled workers, and you got to pay them or you're not going to be able to keep them. In fact, there's been an epidemic of workers just not showing up for work because they got another job. And, you know, we've got a sort of a discourteous generation coming up now that doesn't even bother to tell the previous employer that they quit. They just don't show up.
Congressman,
sort of an odd phenomenon.
Our friend Congressman Schweikert just talked about last week how with what's going on economically, but also reducing the amount of trying to control the border a little bit, that it's brought the working poor to their labor more value than it's had in decades.
Yeah, I think that's definitely supported by the data. And, you know, Republicans, as incompetent as they are at times on messaging, they don't need to tell people you're enjoying good economic health. People know that. People understand that. They have more jobs. They have more opportunity. They have rising wages. They have rising investments in their retirement accounts. I think there's a lot of economic optimism, and people feel really good about the economy. And the only thing the Democrats can say is, oh, well, you know, this started under Obama. He's only continued what Obama did, except everyone who's paying any attention at all understands that the president's main thrust on economic policy has been to reverse literally every single thing that Obama did.
Correct.
Roll back all the regulations, cut taxes when Obama raised them. I mean, this is the sort of the guiding light of this administration economically is to undo and reverse everything that the last administration did. And it's been extremely successful. The other thing that we're going to have going for us in this election is we're going to have a very left-wing Democratic presidential candidate, because they all are. I mean, they're calling people who are extremely left-wing moderates. I mean, people like Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg are not moderates by anyone's book, unless you're comparing them to out-and-proud socialists like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, every single Democratic candidate has said they want to shut down oil and gas production in this country. Well, if you do that, then instead of being energy independent and having an episode like what we had, where you have a geostrategic conflict in the Middle East and oil prices at the pump don't budge at all, you don't even notice it. It's like a non-event here. That's because of the booming oil and gas in this country. Well, they all want to shut that down. And so, I mean, I think the president's going to have a real opportunity to say, look, the ingredients that are making us so successful economically right now, regulatory rollback, tax cuts, affordable, abundant American energy, the Democrats will reverse all of that. And I think that's going to be a very powerful message. And frankly, with the president at the top of the ticket making that case, the rest of the party is going to be sort of swept along, whether they're competent on their messaging or not.
All right, I got about a minute for the next question, then I got to let you go. But tell me about the article in the Journal about the country economically coming out unscathed through this little trade battle with China. What's your take on that?
Well, they're going to be signing the Phase 1 agreement, I think, tomorrow at the White House. And there's a significant easing now of tensions with China. And in particular, China's committed to $40 to $50 billion of agricultural purchases, which basically undoes the retaliation that they took against us and will really, I think, boost the one sector of the economy that has been a little weak, which is the farm sector. And that's going to be crucial in a lot of these Midwestern states. That's the reason the president was so focused on it. And frankly, you know, the one sort of economic drag, with all the other ingredients being really good, the one sort of economic drag has been the trade conflict. And it looks like we're going to get a significant positive resolution of that. And by positive, I mean they've made significant commitments on things like forced technology transfer and violation of intellectual property rights and a lot of the things we've been concerned about long term. And, you know, look, maybe they're lying and they won't keep those commitments. And you're going to see the president put a lot of the tariffs and everything back on in his second term, but maybe they will keep their word and will have really accomplished something. In either event, this significant easing in the near term with this Phase 1 agreement is going to be another shot in the arm for the economy ahead of the election. So I think that the fact that it was the one negative then sort of turns it into yet another powerful positive that it looks like they've been able to at least partially resolve it.
Phil, thanks for the time and the knowledge as always, man. Best of luck. AmericanCommitment.org. Happy New Year also, sir.
Same to you. Have a good one.
Phil Kirp at American Commitment. Coming up next, Tim Sandifer, Goldwater Institute, talking about their latest lawsuit in relation to education and empowerment scholarships. CBS Bloomberg coming up next on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. All right. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson Show. We're doing the workforce development playlist today because young Zach from Tipping Point's coming up at the top of the hour. And we're going to talk about this phrase. You're going to hear it a lot from local leaders.
Ooh.
But as Manny Patinkin, as the swordsman and the Princess Bride, kept on saying, you keep saying the word, but I don't think you know what it means. So we'll have that discussion coming up in the third hour. And let's go right to the phones. We have, hold on, I want to get his title. Tim likes his titles. Hold on. Vice President for Litigation, holds a Duncan Chair in Constitutional Government. And,
oh.
8 zillion other things. Tim Sandifer, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
I want to get to this empowerment scholarships lawsuit you guys just filed, but real quick, what is going on with the bizarreness of worldview in Pima County? Where is that thing at right now?
So that case, it has been divided into a couple parts, and one of them, we are just about to ask the Arizona Supreme Court to take that case. We filed a motion asking the Arizona Supreme Court to take the issue of how the county illegally hired the contractor and the architect to build the project without going through the competitive procurement process that the law requires. Instead, County Administrator Huckleberry simply chose some guys that he knew and gave them the contract, essentially. And we say that that violated, but not only state law, but county ordinances. Now, but you know, now that I've said this, I want to say every time I'm on your show, the officials from the county listen to your show, write down everything I say, and send me angry letters about it. So I just want to say,
congratulations.
This is how your taxpayer dollars are being spent down in Pima County. So I wanted to say good morning to the county officials whose job it is to listen to the radio when I'm on and write me angry letters about how what they did was perfectly legal, which it wasn't, but it looks like they'll probably get away with that part of it, unfortunately. Now, the other part of the case is whether this project was even constitutional, because this basically what happened was the county gave a loan to a private company that couldn't get its own loan. So the county went and got the loan and then passed that money on to the private company, which is a violation of the Arizona Constitution, which prohibits the government from giving or lending money to private corporate entities. And we're going to be making that argument in front of the trial court judge at the end of this month.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate that. That's and the other thing we've learned is that they haven't, the Worldview guys haven't hit their employment numbers that they were supposed to. And we've also learned that they're now shooting off balloons in a different county, being Cochise, because TIA, Tucson International Airport, is a little busy for people floating balloons. So,
and you know, it's not surprising because these kinds of government subsidies to private industry, the only time the government has to subsidize private industry is when that private industry can't make it on its own. It's precisely because it's a risky venture that's going to lose money that the government felt it was important to step in and give them money from taxpayers who have no choice in the matter. So it's almost inevitable that these kinds of government projects are going to be economic losses for the taxpayers in Pima County. It's just inevitably going to happen.
So let's get to this. The more recent about the empowerment scholarship. Now, I believe you can of course correct me. I remember one of the charter school associations was doing these videos of a family who kept on using for these empowerment scholarships. And then once we changed whoever was the head of these, you know, Kathy Hoffman or whoever is the new superintendent of public instruction, they weren't getting their approval of their scholarship so their kid who had special needs could actually go to the school that's the best for them. Is this that case?
No. In fact, this problem has gotten so much worse that it's now hundreds of families across Arizona are having problems because the Department of Education is refusing to give them the funds that they're entitled to under the ESA program. Now, the ESA program, what it does is it says if you have a special needs child whose needs are not being addressed by the government-run school, then the money that the government would have put into that school for your child will be put instead into a separate account, and you can select where to spend that. You can homeschool the child, or you can send the child to an institution that provides those kinds of tailored needs for the child. Unfortunately, the department has adopted this new rule where they have to approve all of your previous expenditures before they give you the next quarter's money. So every 3 months you have to submit a report saying how you spent your money, and then they have to approve the previous report before they give you the next 3 months worth of money. Now that's a violation of the law because the law says the government has to pay you on time. And of course they take so long to approve your previous reports that the Department of Education is now routinely paying parents so late, so far past the deadlines, that these parents are sometimes being required to take their children out of school or to pay for these services out of their own pocket, which means they can never be reimbursed for that money because the department has implemented this new rule. And when we complained about this, the department's answer was, well, this is because we don't have enough money. Now, the bureaucracies always say that. When a bureaucracy messes something up, their excuse is always, well, we're underfunded. Except that in this case, it would cost the department less money if they were to stop implementing this illegal rule.
Now, this rule only happened when Hoffman got elected?
Yes, that's right. Now, okay. Some of the other things we complain about have been going on for a long time. The department came up with a set of rules that they put into this 50-page handbook for parents who participate in this program, and they're very burdensome and restrictive. And they've been doing that handbook for several years, and there is no lawful authority for them to do this handbook. If a government agency in Arizona wants to adopt a new rule, it has to go through a process that allows the public to comment on it and discuss whether or not it would be a good rule. That's called the Administrative Procedure Act. It's been the law for decades. But the department decided in this case just to invent this handbook off the top of its own head with no public input and just implement it and force parents to follow it. And it has all these very stringent restrictions without any kind of public input at all. And they've been doing that for years. And we've been complaining about it for years. And finally, it's got to the crisis point where something had to be done. And so we filed a lawsuit on behalf of four families in Arizona who are suffering these kinds of problems where the department is not paying them the funds that they're legally entitled to.
Who does Kathy Hoffman report to?
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I know she's an elected official.
Because I don't care. Because I don't care. I mean, this is not a political question of Republican versus Democrat. And it's amazing to me that every time I've talked about this case to reporters, particularly in Phoenix, the Arizona Republic reporters, the first thing they say is, well, why didn't you sue when it was a Republican? Well, we've been complaining all along, and it finally reached a point where we had to sue. We aren't concerned with whether it's Republican or Democrat or whatever. Our concern is these children are not getting the educational services that they're entitled to under this program, and whether you're Republican or Democrat, you have to believe two things. One, the government should follow the law, and two, when it doesn't follow the law and it puts kids at risk, then it's time to step in and go to court and get a judge to tell them to follow the law, whether it's Republican or Democrat. So this defensiveness on the part of reporters from the Republic and other organizations that are saying, oh, well, it's okay for us to ignore the law because it's a Democrat in office, is just crazy.
Well, so of course, a lot of these folks believe that this empowerment scholarships are, you know, just part of the slippery slope of still establishing of these charter schools, right?
Of allowing parents to make decisions about what's best for their children. And they're very ideologically opposed to that. I mean, I mentioned the Republic. This is a perfect example. These alleged news reporters who are ideologically opposed to the idea that parents have the right to decide what's best for their children, and who think instead that the government should decide what's best for your child by putting your child into a government school and not allowing you to make another kind of decision about how that child is educated, of course, they're very intensely opposed to the ESA program because they see it as a little glimmer of parental choice and freedom of choice on the part of kids and parents in Arizona, and they're absolutely dead set against that. And so they'll take whatever steps are necessary to burden parents who try to exercise that freedom of choice.
You know, it's so amazing, too, about their hate for charter schools. And for full disclosure, I'm on the board of a charter school, the Lehman Academies. I will tell you that what percentage of kids are in charter schools in America? It's like 7%, right? But they're losing their mind about these places because the parents do have that choice. And they're showing that just leaving them in failing public schools, even though that's what they want you to do. That's the scary part. Kathy Hoffman wants you to leave your kid in a failing public school. It blows my mind, Tim Sandifer from the Goldwater Institute.
You know, when progressive education was invented, it was not just the idea of creating government schools and forcing parents to send their kids to those schools. It was also the idea of outlawing private schools. This is, we're talking about the 1920s. And the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in and said, no, you cannot outlaw private schools. If parents want to send their kids to a private school to satisfy the educational requirements, that's constitutionally protected. And since then, the Supreme Court has consistently said, parents have not just a right, but a fundamental constitutional right to decide what's best for their children. And the government cannot step in as long as those parents aren't being abusive or something, the government can't step in and take that right away. And that really sticks in the craw of a lot of progressives in Arizona and across the nation who really think that children belong to society or belong to the state, and that it's the responsibility of the government to shape those children into being what the government decides is a proper citizen. And those ideologues are very few in number. I think most people think parents should have the right to choice. But unfortunately, these ideologues who think this are very motivated, and they tend to rise to the top where they are in control of movements like Save Our Schools and other organizations that are very much opposed to the idea that a parent has the right to decide what's best for a child.
We know folks like Governor Ducey and some prominent humans in the legislature are huge fans of the charter school movement. Has there been at least any public criticism from folks like that of how Kathy Hoffman and this new rule has just been detrimental to these families?
We were very pleased that yesterday, during his State of the State address, Governor Ducey spoke at great length about the ESA program and the importance of the ESA program for underserved kids and kids who have special needs, and pledged that help is on the way for the many parents who have been suffering this kind of delay and maladministration of the ESA program by the Department of Education. So we're very hopeful at seeing some reforms coming forward. And, you know, honestly, I think I've been given the ADE a lot of flack during this interview, but I think most of the people who work for the Department of Education, they are not trying to make a mess out of the ESA program. I think They are. I think most people who are in the Department of Education want kids to succeed, whether it's in public school or private school.
Right.
Unfortunately, the program is being so poorly administered that it's ending up depriving parents of the choices that they need. And we're not just talking about parents generally. We're talking about parents of the most at risk and the most in need children, the most special needs children who qualify for the ESA program. And the ADE is saying, we're not going to pay you on time. We're going to wait a week, maybe even longer, so that you, as a parent, are required to take your child out of the special tutoring or to pay it out of your own pocket, and you can never be reimbursed for that expenditure. And that's just wrong. If these people are opposed to the ESA program, then go and try and get it repealed. Don't take it out on the parents who are trying to take advantage of this program to get what's best for their special needs kids.
All right, let me sum it up, and then you can see if I'm right on this. So the inefficiency of an ADA bureaucracy basically met Kathy Hoffman's dislike for charter schools, and families suffer even more. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, it's kind of a perfect storm. It really is.
Well, Tim, thanks for the update, as always, on what's going on with what you're working on at the Goldwater Institute. Let's set a date to have you come back after you hang out with my good friends at Pima County later this month.
That's right. And you guys down there at the county who are listening and transcribing this, I'm sorry I talked so fast, but I'm sure you recorded this so you can go back and write me the angry letter about how the county illegally hired the contractor for the Worldview Project and how they violated Arizona law by subsidizing a private business with taxpayer money, which is almost inevitably doomed to fail.
All right, two things. This is a reflection in history. There was a woman who doesn't work for the they have a $2 million communications department over there. And a lady who no longer works there, her job was to listen to the show every morning. And if we said the word Pima County, she had to go to work and transcribe the show.
I'm so glad that's not my job.
And then and she prayed that we never said Pima County because she knew it was going to ruin her entire day to listen to idiots talk about Pima County.
To have to actually work for a day.
Well, you know, I mean, so that's actually really happening. Okay,
amazing.
This is what we do down in Pima County. It's a special, special place, Tim.
Yeah.
So, hey, thanks
good luck to you, and thanks for having me back.
Thanks for the efforts, man. I appreciate it. All right, Tim Sandifer, GoldwaterInstitute.org. When we come back, now remember, this hour of Wake Up brought to you by Cabco AZ, Central Arizona Block, three great locations, Valencia, Wetmore, and out in Sierra Vista. And then remember, Hugh Hewitt is back in the daylight lineup, as we like to say. He is on 10 to 12. We're doing the workforce development playlist for Zach Yenser coming up in a little bit. Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. You know, if you took all the actions of Pima County over the last 30 years, and then you changed all the actors' letters behind their names to R. Just put an R behind Bronson, Elias, and Valadez, and all these people. And then you presented that as a case study to a local Democrat. They would lose their minds. They would go, my God, that's some of the worst misgovernance ever.
They would freak out.
They would. Look at those Republicans with their cronies, and they can't take care of the basics, and they're taking care of fat cats and all this stuff. I mean, that's where we're at. It's pretty good. Hannah Teedy, I think it's named Teedy Tidy. Teedy? I think it's Teedy.
Sure.
T-I-E-D-E over at KOLD. Dapper Dan, if you're listening to me, text me and tell me. Teedy? I think it's Hannah Teedy. I just saw this story because this is about Deonza Park on Stone and Speedway.
Ooh.
So I love this. It says, for
like
years,
Pima College, yeah.
KLD's heard from residents and businesses about the seemingly dire situation. Well, Hannah, take away the word seemingly. It's always been a dire situation. With violence and drug use out in the open, Tucson Parks and Recs launched an initiative more than a year ago to clean things up. Now, you got to listen to these two sentences together because they're hilarious. This is City of Tucson at their best. Tucson Parks and Rec launched an initiative a year ago to clean things up. On Monday morning, authorities took action.
How many years ago?
Said a year ago, but it said on Monday they took action.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
Three inmates.
It's a government job.
Accompanied by TPD. Picked up several bags of grass. It should be trash, excuse me. The grass, once strewn with litter, is now mostly clean. The story is a little ridiculous because the next line says, however, no families returned to the park. but this one lady, Mercedes Martin, says, or Mercedes Martin, quote, I'm sure it's been done before where they pick up the trash, but again, it's not about the trash that's stopping people from going. It's the situation. As a front desk attendant at the University Inn across the street, she has a front row seat to the, quote, situation across the street for years.
Poor lady.
The homeless spend a lot of days at the park. It wouldn't be an issue except for the fact that it comes with a lot of drug needles in the area and unwanted fights. One of those fights was caught on camera by Justice Smith. It was recorded on Sunday. And it shows a man getting out of his vehicle, yelling at a group of people in the park. Then he's chased by three men with Oh, Bliskin Acres. Well, it's right on the edge. It's just so.
Oh, it's definitely the park.
All right. So listen to this. This is just Sunday.
Cleaning up.
Today's Tuesday, right? So that's 48 hours ago. Shows a man getting out of his vehicle, yelling at a group of people in the park. Then the man's chased by the three men. I love this with this description. With makeshift weapons, including a crowbar. There is homeless guys running around Dianza Park with makeshift weapons and crowbars.
Nice place you got there.
You can see the man being hit repeatedly by two of the men until he draws blood. Smith says the man's car was then stolen.
That's horrible. It's right in the middle of your city, folks. Right before the gateway to downtown. This is Stone and Speedway. If you want to go downtown...
Well, how many blocks is it from Dianza Park to the businesses of 4th Avenue? That's one of the biggest collection points of taxes in the area. What, two blocks?
Yeah, the other way, yeah.
So, east. Hannah, I just want to thank you. Everyone, you've been warned. Bum park on Swan and Speedway.
Hashtag Stone and Speedway.
Stone and Speedway, excuse me. Thank you, sir. Hashtag Romero era.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sweet.
Cops at 1988 staffing levels. There are dudes running around, homeless dudes, running around Dianza Park with crowbars and makeshift weapons. Not my words. CBS affiliate KOLD live local late breaking. Makeshift weapons. This segment of KOLD brought to you by Shivs R Us over at Prince and Oracle.
And TPD. Thank you.
Well, not by TPD, by the Tucson City Council.
Damn.
That's where we're at. So